Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Oil and gas are a gift of God. These were the words of the president of COP29's host country, Azerbaijan, just yesterday, the latest in a series of embarrassing headlines for the annual climate conference. Well, representing Ireland at the summit is Eamon Ryan, the Minister for the Environment, Climate, Communications and Transport. And he joins me now from Baku. Good morning, Eamon.
Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
I'm very well, but let's start with those comments from Azerbaijan's president criticising the so-called Western fake news about the country's emissions. He said nations should not be blamed for having fossil fuel reserves. And this comes after we heard last week that there was a senior COP official apparently using the summit to organise oil deals. In your view, does that undermine the work that negotiators like yourself are trying to do?
Whatever about the work negotiators are doing, what it would do if we use those fossil fuels, it would be undermine the future of our children and their children. If we don't keep the fossil fuels in the ground, they will not be safe. They will be at risk. We will have increased conflict, increased forced migration. So for their future, for the safety of all the people in this world, we need to switch to a different gift from God. There's a God from the heavens. We get solar power and we get the weather systems which drive our wind and drive the renewable resources which we can turn to, which are safe, which exist everywhere, which are now the cheaper alternative. So there are a lot of people who are looking back at what was agreed in Dubai last year, where we agreed to phase out the use of fossil fuels, and are saying, well, maybe we could do it differently. Maybe we don't need to do it yet. Maybe in the States, we've seen a new administration going to come in to say we're going to drill, drill, drill. So there are a number of countries maybe taking that approach. Mm-hmm. But that cannot prevail. That cannot win. Because that would not come from the heavens. That would come from hell.
But on COP itself, and we had George Monbiot on the programme yesterday, he said this is like a trade fair for lobbyists, that it's stuffed full of people trying to do deals on fossil fuels. And he says you need to get them out. You need to stop them. They should not be there. What do you say to that?
I think George is correct in a number of ways about the process. It's very difficult. There's no easy way in which you can get 196 countries together. You have this, the way it works, just to explain to people, it's called a COP, the Conference of the Parties. It's the 29th time that 195 or so countries have met. On the sideline of that, then, you have a huge circus, which is a whole variety of other business or NGO or academic or other groups. And they kind of tend to meet on the sidelines. But the actual inner negotiations, it's typically civil service politicians. It isn't oil lobbyists or anyone else. It is actually agreements between governments. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is that those vested interests do influence political discourse, do influence the public debate, and particularly, and we see it in our own country, we see it's very difficult to make big changes. It's very difficult to actually switch systems. They tend to cast out, and they particularly the oil companies are a real issue here, because they have known about the science of climate for decades. They often actually knew it ahead of governments, but they ignored that scientific reality. The truth is we cannot ignore it anymore. It is now evident. People can see it. We can see it in our own country, but you can see it in Valencia, mm-hmm. North Carolina, in Nepal. Across the world now, we're seeing the impacts of climate change. So that fossil fuel interest cannot win.
Okay.
That cannot be the thing that defines negotiations.
But are you saying that because this is a conference of the parties, that you wouldn't want to see these oil companies being kicked out, that they should be there?
No, I don't. Well, no, they're not there. They're not in the negotiation rooms. They're not anywhere near it. They may be, you may have some sort of, and if someone is, then that is obviously a real problem. But that's not our biggest challenge. I think our biggest challenge is how do you get the governments, how do you get the political system to make the commitment we need to make? And what George Monbiot says in that is correct. This is a very difficult process. But the problem you have is there isn't an alternative. If we are to act collectively in climate, and it has to be collective, you do have to meet as a conference of parties where you try and get everyone to agree. Now, that's not easy. But one thing I would say to give people a sense of hope in a difficult world at the moment, The Paris Agreement, which was signed 9 years ago, it'll be 10 years old next year, was actually an example of that multilateral collaboration where it's in all our interests to collaborate. And it actually has provided a robust structure. Now, we have not reduced the emissions fast enough. But we have moved. When the Paris Agreement was signed, it looked like we were facing to a world where you would have an average 4 degree increase. Now, that's come down to something like just below 3 degrees. We need to get it down below 2, and we need to get back towards 1.5 degrees. Mm-hmm. Change is possible. There is things happening in the world. Whatever about the fossil fuel interests, the reality is in our world in recent years, the investment in the clean renewable alternative has now overtaken the fossil fuel investment.
Right.
And what we need to do is, that fossil fuel investment needs to halve again in the next 5 years. Their business model is coming to an end.
Right.
That may be why they're struggling so hard to keep it.
Well, they have.
But we cannot keep burning fossil fuels.
But they have so much power when it comes to the decision making process at COP, which is the consensus model. That means that the oil rich countries get to decide how far we go in terms of climate action. I mean, do you believe that voting mechanism needs to change at COP?
First, I'd say I'm not so much certain how much power they have. I'll give an example. Last year, the UAE, which is another oil state that produces a lot of oil and gas, issued a first draft. And we went out to the European Union and others went out clearly and said, first of all, no, this is not good enough. This cannot pass. We cannot agree to it. And it is strange in international negotiations. It's hard to describe how it can work. But sometimes when you start to build higher ambition coalitions, you can actually change the room. And that's what happened last year. I've just come out of a meeting of the Higher Ambition Coalition, which is a group, it was about 20 countries this morning, with the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres. And actually, I've seen how it can work where the fossil fuel interests lose, where they don't actually hold the day. And that's what we have to make sure happens here again this year.
We know that there's this big row brewing because China claims that it's a developing country, so therefore it doesn't have to pay into the major new fund to help the poorer countries cope with climate change. This is despite, as many people will know, China being the world's biggest polluter and the second largest economy. Do you believe China should now be classed as a developed country?
I don't think we're at an agreement where they're reclassified as a developed country, but I do think we need to what's called broaden the contributor base. The idea that it's just how you define countries back in 1992 defines who now pays, particularly if a country is either a large emitter with a very large industrial base like China, or a country like Saudi Arabia, who's incredibly wealthy and making the money actually from the use of fossil fuels. I think we're absolutely right in the developed world to say, well, they also do have to make a contribution. Rather than doing that by redefining them as a country, I think there are a number of ways that that can happen. One of the ways would be, first of all, getting real transparency and reporting and accounting and internationally agreed standards to measure what's already happening, which is significant investment by China and the likes of Africa and other developing countries, what the South-South financial flows. And you measure that, first of all, well, to have a sense of what's happening, but also to make sure that it's fair and that the debt burden that those developing countries can handle is actually a sustainable one.
Can we talk about the Americans? Have you been speaking to any American representatives there? Do they have any idea what the future for US climate change policy looks like under Trump, who we know has said climate change is a scam? He's making his appointments in the last couple of hours, some new and very relevant ones. What are they saying to you there? What do they expect is going to happen?
Only flew in last night, so I haven't met them yet, but I will. And John Podesta, who was Obama's chief of staff, is heading their negotiation team. I know him well. And what he said yesterday, reported, is they're continuing to play a positive role when they're here. Clearly, it's a huge disappointment in terms of from the climate perspective that it's very likely that the US will pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement. I don't believe they could as easily withdraw from the United Nations Framework Convention, which the Paris Agreement sits within. And I also not so sure, we've been here before where America, when Trump was first elected, pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement. While it did, as John Podesta say, slow their transition, it won't stop it. The truth is that the states in America, which still have a lot of power around the economy and transport and other key issues around climate, are still going to decarbonize because they realize it's in their interest as well as the wider world's interest. And also their business and companies, I think, the same. They increasingly, or they often take a longer 10, 20 year view, and they know that if you just keep burning fossil fuels, if your business is founded on something that's killing the planet, you won't have a viable, sustainable business. So yes, it will create difficulties. But going back to what I said earlier about the process, or maybe going back to the very start, we were saying there about George Monbiot and, you know, is this a flawed process? You can't have a process where one country does have a veto, where it says we're out, and then the whole process stops. Strangely, what it might do is it might actually energize the rest of the world, recognizing we have a real challenge here, made harder by what the American government may do. But actually, that cannot stop us. We cannot be forced into a just letting the world burn because there was one country had a certain political position. I think the other thing for this on Europe, and it was interesting, it was at the European Energy Council 2 weeks ago and the Environment Council. And we were asking ourselves, well, where do we now fit in Europe? Like, is our competitiveness really challenged? Because American fossil fuels for them are much cheaper and much easier to use. We have to pay more, they have to be shipped and so on. And we realized in Europe that we don't have another economic play, that our competitiveness, our security, our future is in switching away from use of fossil fuels and getting an advantage by having a really efficient, clean economy. In a strange way, if America delays, because this economy is coming, an economy which is built on something that is destroying the planet is not going to be viable in the end. And in a strange way for America, it might actually, even though in the short run it's very challenging for Europe, in the medium to long term, we may have an advantage by going quicker to where we know the world economy is going to go.
Minister,
because it's a better economy.
Minister, thank you for joining us from Baku. That's Minister Eamon Ryan.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.